You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 5th of November, the US votes finally. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Karen Whitten from Anchor. Troubles at Boeing, although they are voting today to see if they can end the strike. But there is robust demand, especially wide-body aircraft. We'll ask him if there's opportunity. Maybe it's Airbus. Andrew Koenig, CEO, Redefine. Results that they say shows the worst is behind the local property sector. And then Sean Morrison from IG South Africa. How can we get targets from all-time highs when looking at a chart? And what's his projections for gold? But this podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, avoiding fiscal fireworks. In recent years, budget events have been a now or never feeling about them. This year's budget was uneventful, which is a good thing. Business Day, Treasury may tap PRC for health funding using National Saving Pool under consideration, says Health Minister. Not sure it's a National Saving Pool. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.3 and NASDAQ down 0.35%. The East is mostly green. Sydney off 0.02%, Tokyo up 1.1%, Hong Kong up 1.1%, and Tencent up 0.5%. Commodities mostly red. Gold, 2,739. Brent is green, 75.16. Platinum, 991. Palladium, 1,086. Rand, 17.49. Bitcoin, 68,000. Top 40 opening call, a red open, 70 points or 0.1% down.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Karen Whitten from Anchor. Karen, appreciate the early morning time. Boeing, been a shaft of challenges for Boeing over the last many years, both safety related, production related. They are currently on strike and voting as to whether or not they should come back from strike. Your take on it? I mean, there is demand for wide body aircraft. There are only really two manufacturers in the world.
Good morning, Simon. Good to be on the show. And yeah, we've had a number of clients asking about this. And I think just to highlight the aviation manufacturing industry, like you've said, is a duopoly. There's only really two possible options. There's the in the US, there's Boeing, and in Europe, there's Airbus, and they pretty much supply the whole global market. And I think that's pretty much a feature of this industry, is that there is no real alternative for these big wide-body jets for the long-haul flights. These are the only two manufacturers. And then the other one is that there's been a backlog from not just Boeing, but Airbus as well for a number of years. And I think it's quite tough to say who's going to benefit the most here, because this backlog is just so severe. And I think you can't just ramp up production. You know, there's if you've got 5-6 years of backlog, and there's also supply chain issues that both companies are struggling with. So it's a tough situation at the moment for both companies. Boeing, of course, is getting all the bad headlines over the years, a number of crashes, quality control issues. The pandemic came at the wrong time. As I've mentioned, the supply chains, including labor with that, the chicken's really coming home to roost. There has been severe reputational damage at Boeing. And these strikes now, I think it's going on to the sixth or seventh week.
Yeah.
And it's costing Boeing $50 million per day. And now you've got the banks and the credit issuers coming after them and saying, wait a second, you guys are not going to make profits for the next year or two. And now their credit rating is also at threat of being downgraded to junk status. They've announced a rights issue which will dilute shareholders. So you've really had a lot of bad news coming into Boeing, which was a company that really dominated the market and was a technological leader. But with that said, a lot of bad news is being priced in. But Simon, I don't know. This is a tough industry for investors to do well in. The margins are tight. So it's something we're getting asked about a lot, and it's very strategically important for the world. But from an investment point of view, I'm not sure. I would probably recommend allocating elsewhere where there's higher returns on capital.
I like your point about that, in that there is demand for wide-body aircraft. This is a duopoly. It's Airbus and Boeing. And intuitively, you think to yourself, well, hey, presto, there's money to be made for investors. Mm. But when you sort of scratch the surface, sometimes we walk away from what intuitively looks like a good industry, but actually isn't. And we are then better taking our capital and doing something else with it, being brave enough to say, thanks, mm-hmm. but not for me.
Yes, exactly, Simon. And I mean, if you just look throughout the industry and the supply chain, you've got companies in the defense sector which are influenced by this, like Lockheed Martin. Mm. But of course, you've got expectations, I think, that are sky high there at the moment based on years of conflict throughout the world. And again, there's backlogs there. So I'm not sure that would be a beneficiary, to be honest, due to the expectations that are so high. And then if you look at even just the airlines throughout the world, I mean, you can pull up most share price charts of airlines throughout the world. It's not really a pretty sight. It really is a tough industry. I think you've got a few exceptions. Ryanair would be the one mm-hmm. that has managed to gain market share consistently. There's a company that we like called Embraer. It is a Brazilian yeah. company. And they are not direct competitors because they don't do the long-haul wide-body jets. And they're for the more short-haul flights, but they really are a technology leader in this industry. So that could be one to watch. They, I think, are licking their chops at this. So if I had to take a punt in this industry, that could possibly be the one that I would maybe look at.
Yeah, I've actually heard a fair bit about the Embraer. There's Comac as well in China, but Embraer seems yeah. to be the one who actually has some really good product. As you say, short haul, not the wide body, not the long haul. We will leave that there. That's Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. There's certainly demand for wide body aircraft. Is there opportunity here? Or maybe the lesson, as Kieran suggests, is, you know what, sometimes there is good spaces, but bad businesses. Have your vote. Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Andrew Coonan. He's CEO at Redefine. Results for year-end August saw revenue up 7.5%, distributable income off 2.9%, NAV per share 788.28 cents. Andrew, appreciate the time. In your results, you talk around confidence being hugely important for the real estate market. You also mentioned that the financial year we're talking around to end August really did seem to be a turning point in the local property market. Not going to be shooting the lights out going forward, but the worst is behind us. Is that a fair shout?
Absolutely, it is. The fortunes of commercial real estate are really inextricably tied to both confidence and interest rates being kinder to the property market and to the individuals as well. So for us, these two factors are working in tandem mm. to get that flywheel of the property sector turning once again in the right direction and getting a bit of momentum, which will bode well from a property cycle point of view. We're seeing the confidence play out in our operating metrics, which are mostly improving or at worst stabilizing. And I think with interest rate cuts on the way, it's going to be very beneficial to us going forward, Simon.
The rate cut obviously came post your period end, but prior to that, we had, you know, the 200 plus days of no load shedding. We've got a functioning government of national unity. We've got inflation on the way down. I take your point. You know, there's a different sense that we're seeing out there in the economy. I want to touch interest rates. Your interest costs was up 15%. That was because of some acquisition and the like as well, but also higher rates. As we see the rates come down, we've got a 0.25%. Hopefully we get another cut later this month, again in January. Does that then take that number down? I mean, are you that sensitive to the rates?
Look, Simon, yes, absolutely. The interest rate will benefit Redefine. However, I just need to remind you that we do have a hedging policy in place mm. where roughly between 75 to 85% of our debt book is at any point in time hedged against interest rate fluctuations, which means that we don't necessarily see these reductions falling entirely to the bottom line. So it is a gradual okay. process. It's a gradual process, but one that will ease the overall burden for us, given that we've got a pretty significant debt burden out there of some 42 billion rand.
Got you on that. Let's start with office, still the tough space. But again, some green shoots. You're still getting some negative reversions coming through. How is the space and how are you finding it easier, perhaps? Are you finding it to fill vacancies?
So, Simon, our challenge isn't necessarily the vacancy situation. In fact, if you have a look, we are starting to improve our occupancy levels, primarily as a consequence of having 95% of our portfolio skewed towards the premium and A-grade sectors. However, there is pressure on market rentals, and that is a consequence of an oversupply in the market, so tenants are spoiled for choice. And what we really need here, Simon, is some economic growth to work off that excess supply at the moment. Now, that's going to take some time. We know where the economy is heading, but we take some comfort from the fact that there is work underway to break loose from this 1% kind of ceiling that we find ourselves in from a growth perspective, because we really need on a sustained basis economic growth of circa 3 to 3.5% to really work off that excess supply. And that then will mean that we start seeing a bit of demand creep into the system, which will be positive on the market rentals, and the renewal reversions will start swinging from the current negative 13.9% to a more palatable level.
And your retail space, it is 100% anecdotal, but when I go to shopping malls these days around payday weekend, they are busy. There are queues to get into parking. There are people in the hallways, not sure if they're spending, but how are you finding the retail space?
The retail space is a different story, Simon. Yeah, we've seen renewal reversions, for example, swing around from a minus 4% last year to a positive, albeit a small positive, but nonetheless positive territory of 0.2% this year. And occupancy, similarly, we're sitting on an overall occupancy level of 95% for our retail portfolio. Mm-hmm. It's well up on last year's 93.6%. But if we do exclude some office occupancy within our retail centers, we are closer to, you know, the 99% level of occupancy. So retail is doing very, very well. And we're very bullish about the prospects of retail going forward.
You're still rolling out solar PV. This, I imagine, is no longer around load shedding. This is more around being green, renewable energy. And I imagine cost as well. Certainly, when I speak to mining CEOs, they're like, you know, solar just pays for itself quickly and gives uninterrupted power.
Yes, look, Simon, solar is definitely important, especially at our retail centers, where roughly 18% of our consumption comes off the rooftop. Mm-hmm. But one is to supplement that with power purchase agreements if you are really to make a meaningful inroad into that consumption from a more energy and environmental kind of friendliness point of view. So we're looking at power purchase agreements to add to our solar PV capacity. And we're currently looking at an arrangement where roughly 8% of our consumption, or roughly 25% of our office consumption, will be derived from sources other than our own energy generation. And that is all about improving the environmental friendliness of our energy usage.
A last question. You've got assets in Eastern Europe, Poland, about a third of total assets, mostly retail, although you have some other bits. You've got some storage there as well. How's that doing? Because Europe's a weird place. Parts of Europe seem to be doing really well, and Poland's often the case. Other parts less well. How are you finding business in Europe?
So we are, as you said, exposed to the Polish region. And Simon, we're doing very well there, thanks to an economy that is stable. It's growing around about 3% in this calendar year. The prospects for next year is as good as this year. So things are stable. There was a time when institutional activity from an investment perspective was very quiet, but I'm very pleased to say that I was there about 3 weeks ago. And having returned, I came back with a very strong sense that things are starting to normalize in that geography. And what you are seeing there is retail sales growth on the back of easing energy prices, which was driving the inflation up quite considerably last year. And you're also seeing, from a logistics perspective, similar demand creeping in on the leasing front, where things have been a little bit quiet, but picking up once again, all on the back of providing infrastructural support to Germany in particular.
Yeah, and 3% GDP growth in euros. Yo, we would love that back here in South Africa. We'll leave it there. It's Andrew Coonan, his CEO, Redefine. Appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the Money.
I'm chatting with Sean Morrison. You find him at IG South Africa. Sean, appreciate the time I got you on to pick your brain because something which has me confused, and I thought you were the gent who could help. When we're looking at charts and we're looking at technical analysis, I'm a very simple oak when I do technical analysis anyway. But when they hit sort of all-time highs, and maybe we could even use it for multi-year highs, but all-time highs, gold, Nvidia, others out there, I just don't know how to do it anymore in terms of targets, in terms of where's this potentially going. I'm left completely floundering. Is there a trick that sort of rarefied air of new highs?
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me. Always quite hard to explain the technicals and the charts via audio, but I'll do my best on that. Firstly, I think I agree with your approach there because it's a similar approach to me. It's just keeping things simple. So, you know, how far can something go? No one really knows. We're all trying to tell the future here, but we give ourselves a price expectation. You know, where could that price go? Mm-hmm. You know, with you trading or investing, give yourself some type of assumption as to where that market might go. For me, the simplest one, as we're moving into new high territory, just draw a trend line. And so instead of maybe drawing the trend line underneath the price, you know, matching all the lows, mm-hmm. I like to match the highs. So maybe it's trading in a channel or mm-hmm. just look at those significant highs and give yourself a relatively conservative target on the way up. It's not an exact science because depending on how quickly the price moves towards that level will slightly change, but it gives you that basic sort of expectation of where it could go. Other popular techniques, I think it depends on how the price is, you know, how it's moved into new high territory. Has it broken out of a sideways range or a consolidation? Mm-hmm. So when that price doesn't always trend, sometimes it moves it sideways and you can measure the height of that, take that height and then project it from the breakout to give yourself what you call a proportionate target. For those that are trading with technical analysis, they might look at things like triangles and look at that height of that triangle and project that same distance from that breakout area. And then another one, which is grown in popularity, so seen as maybe a bit of a more advanced technique, is looking at these Fibonacci type extensions. So looking at the price, looking, because the market doesn't move in a straight line, or sometimes it does seem to at the moment, but waiting for that first little pullback in price from a fresh high, see where that pullback ends, measure that with what we call a Fibonacci extension, and it projects percentage moves if those gains were to resume. So again, it's always uncharted territory is exactly that. So, but we just try to keep it simple. My preference there is just to draw a trend line, or if it's come from a consolidation, just to look for a proportionate move in direction.
I got you. Because there are some, I mean, head and shoulders or inverse or something. You mentioned triangles. Yeah. They are nice. They give nice sort of levels. They can certainly work at the new highs. It also, I suppose, depends on your style of trading. I mean, I'm a momentum trader. I'm a very lazy trader. I typically don't so much worry about targets because I can be in a position for ages. And often I'm ungeared. I'm long gold. I have no gearing on it. I've got a miner. I've got some GLDs. In which case, I just use a trailing stop and let that take me out, or a technical, you know, lower lows or something like that, which kind of means it's just blue sky until it's not.
Yeah, so I mean those methods are, if we don't know how long that trend's going to be in place, so why not just lock in the profits, tighten that stop loss as the mm-hmm. market moves into new high territory. You know, I think if you are using technical analysis and trading, your belief is that markets do move in trends, and certainly a market that's making higher highs and higher lows is in an upward trend.
Yeah.
And we like to just stay in that direction and try to ride that out as long as possible. And trailing a stop loss, like you said, is a good way of doing that. You know, sometimes price will give you some clues, you know, give you a reversal signal, maybe an overbought signal, or, you know, the price will just give you this little change in direction, a bearish candlestick pattern. But for most part, we are just, we're working to, I think it's Newton's first law, an object in motion likes to stay in motion until acted upon by an external force. So
I'd never thought I'd use my standard eight science for my technical analysis, but yeah, I like that. And it does make sense. When something's got momentum, don't stand in the way. So last question, I mentioned gold up front. We've pulled back a bit. The futures got above 2,800 last week. We're down around 2,750. What would be your target for gold? Or is this one of those that, how long's a piece of string? If you like gold and like the story, stay long.
Yeah, so I mean, gold is a perfect example. That trend is firmly up. We know markets don't move in a straight line. You know, it's mm-hmm. been slightly off the highs, but you know, if we use some of those methods we mentioned earlier on, I've just got a long-term trend line just matching a whole of the highs. It gives me a more conservative target if we do resume some gains, sitting at about $2,840 per ounce. And then if you were to use that, you know, that Fibonacci extension type, I think there's a bit more of an aggressive target there, sitting at about 2,930. But I like to trade each level as it comes. So, you know, I'd go with that conservative target first, sitting at about 2,840.
I take your point. It's got to go through one to get to the other. We'll leave it there. Sean Morrison, IG South Africa. Always appreciate the time. That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Sustainable retail growth.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.